While attacks from the right on Barack Obama and his administration have been unrelenting, progressives have not shrunk from harsh words for a president whose election they once pronounced an historic triumph. Theologian and social activist Gary Dorian has not hesitated to criticize the president, but hearing time and again the litany of betrayal as he meets progressives across America, he does rise to President Obama's defense. His new book is The Obama Question, A Progressive Perspective. Gary Dorian is the Reinhold Professor of Social Ethics at Union Theological Seminary and Professor of Religion at Columbia University, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the program. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. It's a delight to be with you.
Give us a sense of how you came to this, looking at the progressive perspective when it comes to our President of the United States.
Well, firstly, my work is in two fields. I do work that deals with social ethics and social theory and politics and the like. I've written books on economic democracy and anti-imperial politics and so on. So that's one side. And then my other half deals with issues in modern religious and philosophical thought. So I'm out on the lecture trail speaking just all the time about one of those things. And I just heard constantly over the last couple of years people coming up to me saying, I'll never work for him again. I worked hard last time, but he has so betrayed us. I've had it with Obama. And often they expect I'm going to agree because I'm known for blasting away at him right from the beginning of his presidency. But I just heard so much of this, I just finally thought, this is getting dangerous, a little out of hand, and well, we've got to catch this in a little bit of a larger perspective politically about what moment we're in, or otherwise we're going to have a bigger disaster coming than happened in 2000.
One of the things that you point out is that, yes, there are many things to criticize, but you believe that he has not gotten enough credit from progressives for the things that he has achieved.
That is true. I mean, right from the beginning, you know, that initial stimulus package was not as big as it needed to be. No, it was only half as large as it needed to be. And I think they should have fought for more than they got. He deserves some kind of honeymoon, some kind of credit. To think that if they believed, as they did, that in fact that it wasn't enough, well, why not work to try to get a larger stimulus out of it? And yet, there were things in that package that have gone unheralded. The expansion of the earned income tax credit has kept millions of people out of poverty in recent years. They didn't draw any attention to that because they thought if they make a big deal about how that's the best anti-poverty initiative in 30 years, that might jeopardize its going down. Similarly, 2 months later, Obama comes out, makes the decision to now he's going to do health care. You know, seven presidents have tried and failed to do universal health care. And yes, the way he went about it ended up demoralizing, angering a lot of us who were angry that he took single payer off the table and then he didn't work at all for the public option and he let it wither on the vine through the summer and didn't even tell us that he had let go of it, that he wasn't going to fight for it in the Senate. And it made a lot of us very angry, you know, when we learned all that. Nonetheless, I mean, look what still needs to be defended. That's an historic achievement. He's come closer to universal health care than anybody, has an enormous anti-poverty gain for this country. And we do finally, you know, have a bill that eliminates people being excluded because of pre-existing conditions or losing your health care because you'll lose your job or not being able to have your 24-year-old covered. These are enormous gains, and we're barely even beginning to see the upside of what's come from the health care reform. And you just go right down the line on virtually all of these big issues. He has made historic gains for us. It's never most of us were hoping for. And there's just the fact that he was never willing to plant the flag anywhere and say, I'm fighting for this. I'm going to risk legislative defeat on this because I care so much about getting this right. You know, he's never done that. And so since it never happened, it's very hard for progressives just to keep even to recognize the considerable achievements that he's made.
It was a question from the very beginning of how patient all voters would be when it came to the many changes that were promised. Obviously, after 8 years of the Bush administration, many voters, certainly those who voted for President Obama, were looking for a very distinct change. When we look specifically at progressives, why do you think the president has had so much trouble with that base?
Well, it was tremendously disillusioning right out of the box. I mean, he's barely been elected, and the next announcement you get is that Tim Geithner is going to be the Treasury Secretary, and then you find out Larry Summers is going to be his leading economics advisor. And it was just very, very hard to swallow. The two Democratic officials most closely tied to Wall Street, one who cut the bailout deals and then arranged the mergers so that the big banks got even bigger, and the other one who helped to break down the wall between investment and commercial banking. Those are the two people who are going to be running the economic shop. It was very, very hard. And here, especially in this area, it's not like foreign policy where, frankly, we have a lack of a real brain trust on the progressive side with foreign policy, people who have, government experience and training and are simply in that system. On the economic side, we're up to here with Nobel Prize winning liberal economists who you were hopeful were going to be in the picture and getting something better. So that right from the beginning, that was very, very hard to swallow, and it has made a difference down the line, I'm afraid.
Do you think he campaigned 4 years ago as a true progressive?
No, people are forgetting this. I mean, there are certain ways in which obviously Obama is the most progressive president we've ever had, that no one really even comes close to him. I mean, think about his comfort with the multicultural background and the fact that he taught, he knows critical race theory. He taught civil rights law for years. I mean, Obama is an expert on the workings of white supremacism and why it's still an issue in our country and why we're not in a post-racial society. There are a whole series of kind of social, historical, global sort of issues. He's a far more sort of just sophisticated and progressive figure than we've ever had there and are probably ever going to have. But of course, he on hardcore sort of economic and foreign policy issues, kind of bread and butter issues, he never claimed he was to the left on any of these things. Obama is a liberal leaning moderate. That's exactly how he campaigned. I mean, the only risky position he had in his portfolio last time was, he was opposed to the war in Iraq. But of course, he committed himself to that before he was a national figure, and by the time he's running in 2007. That played to his favor in the Democratic weeding out process. So on everything else, he was just a liberal leaning at most moderate. That book, Audacity of Hope, is just filled with on the one hand and on the other hand, and now I come down the middle between these two hands. But too many people thought, just looked past all that and projected onto him that, oh, if we elect him, it'll be sort of like electing Martin Luther King president. And so they set themselves up.
Gary Durian is the author of The Obama Question, A Progressive Perspective. You write in the book that in electing Barack Obama, we, quote, seem to be taking a shortcut to some kind of national redemption. How so?
Well, shortcuts of various kinds here. I mean, firstly, there's just the fact that he ran so much sooner than even he expected to. I mean, he'd always expected to run, but for it to come as soon as he did after only a couple of years in the Senate, that's not what he planned. It's just he had these enormous crowds wherever he went, and they were passionate, and they were begging him to run. And his wife is saying, stop it, wait till he's accomplished something. And they wouldn't wait. And these are almost all, white moderates and liberals begging him to run. And finally, people like Harry Reid pull him aside and say, this is not going to come along when you want it to. It is coming along now, and the Bush presidency is falling apart, and there's no such thing really as running too soon, because later on you'll just have more of a record to have to defend anyway. Deal with it. It's already come your way. So that, you know, there are various kinds of shortcuts occurring there. It's just the whole thing, the whole process was dramatically accelerated. And also the way that he understood his own appeal and the way he campaigned. Joe Klein asked him the question. Joe Klein, the Time magazine journalist, started to ask the question anyway, to say, do white Americans have this sort of need for validation that they get from people like Oprah Winfrey and Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan? And he barely even got the question out, and Obama jumps all over it. And he says, yes. He says, people like Oprah Winfrey give white people, white Americans, a shortcut to their better instincts. And he says, and I think that is wrongly demeaned. When people make fun of that, there's something wrong about that. And he says it's a good thing to have people like Oprah in our national culture who help white people get there, take that shortcut. He says the point is, you know, it needs to go beyond just the Oprah types. But he was explicit about recognizing that is right at the center of his political appeal. They found out about it just, you know, when he ran for Senate the first time, when he ran in 2004 for the Senate. And so, you know, he knows it. And the campaign itself was very carefully calibrated on that score.
I do want to get back to a subject that we were speaking of earlier, and that is the loss of his progressive base. And we mentioned healthcare, but I would like to go into that in a bit more depth.
Yeah.
Because of failing to fight for a public option was certainly something that progressives were very upset about. And although, as you indicated earlier in our conversation, damage had already been done, but was that the straw that broke the camel's back for many people?
Well, that first summer was very strange. And of course, that's when the Tea Party got was roaring already, and you had those dramatic conferences, meetings at which people like Charlie Grassley are up campaigning against, you know, this healthcare plan is going to kill grandma, measures that he had supported always right up till then, and now is turned against it. I think what was so difficult about that whole healthcare business. Firstly, I don't think they really were ready to roll on it. I mean, there was only one person on his whole entire team that wanted to do healthcare next. That was Melody Barnes, who was a former Senator Ted Kennedy staffer. She'd worked on this for years. So she was for it, but nobody else wanted to do it next. They just said, it's too big a lift politically. It'll cost you too much. Obama replied, he says, well, yeah, I'm willing to spend about 15 points of capital. That is to say that, you know, he understood that it was going to bring him down, but that this was an historic thing, and he was going to get as close to universal coverage as he could. But we got the public option through the House, and they apparently made this count in the White House that they were going to fall 9 or 10 votes short in the Senate, and they thought it was hopeless. So they didn't. He didn't twist arms. They just thought that we're never going to get Ben Nelson types to vote for this, or maybe even, you know, the two women from the Republican women from Maine, never get them for a public option. So just the votes aren't there, since you have to get 60 votes in the Senate. And since that was so clear to them, they just kind of wrote it off. But they didn't tell us either. I mean, he had already cashed it in, but he left us hanging out there the whole summer, not saying, you know, I've already written it off, because he didn't want to offend us. And so we didn't find out until, you know, the thing had played itself out at the end of the summer, early fall, that in fact he was ready to sign off and had said so, sign off on the public option. That was terrible. And it is so because, yeah, we weren't even allowed to talk about single payer, but the logic of a strong public option does take you to single payer. I mean, it could work that way. People were given an option to have, you know, a decent coverage and a government plan, and people were allowed to take it. That is a strong enough plan. It could lead. It could very well have led to something like single payer, which, of course, is precisely why the insurance companies were so up in arms against it.
Let us fast forward from that first summer and fall to 2011 and the debate over the debt ceiling. You say that the debt ceiling drama marked a turning point in the president's presidency. What makes you think that, what is it about that debate and specifically what you think changed so significantly?
Well, I mean, in late July, he was still hoping. He actually did hope that he was going to be able to pull off something colossal with Boehner and so redeem all this terribleness that he'd lived through in the past months. And it's just as well for the country that he didn't, wasn't able to pull that off. But I think he does get now what happened to him all last year, that he was taken into these hostage situations in which he was taken hostage by people who really did. I mean, the Tea Party really was perfectly willing. They weren't bluffing. They were ready. They really wanted to drive the country into default. And he now gets that all the way down. And he has been a different person on the stump ever since, you know, early August of last year. The whole thing started the previous December when, shortly after the election, we had the issue about the Bush tax cuts coming up, and he broke a major campaign promise to not let the Bush tax cuts elapse on the upper end. And he had the opportunity. Geithner's own staff people said, well, here's what we might do. If we're going to break a major campaign promise about the Bush tax cuts, we should just say right now, all right, what the quid pro quo here is that we deal with a debt ceiling right now. Just resolve that so we don't have to deal with that coming down the pike. And Obama faithfully, just tragically, says, oh no, we'll wait for that to come in its time. We have to trust that the Republicans will do the responsible thing, you know. Well, that was spectacularly not to be, and it just ruined the entire spring and summer last year when they took us hostage. So, having lived through that horror, he gets what he's up against now. And I think it shows in the way he has been behaving since. I think he clearly understands that the rest of his presidency has to be focused on massive investments for a clean energy economy. And the logic of that, if you apply it retroactively, I even think he probably realizes that he played it wrong early on, that instead of doing health care when he did, he should have kept pouring on Keynesian gas. We can't relive any of that. But the presidency that he's clearly talking about now and committed to is the one that is renewing the economy by making strategic social investments in it.
So here we are in an election year, and as you say, there have been differences since August. And When you see President Obama now out on the stump of whether it probably will be Romney, although it could be Senator Santorum, sure. Do you think you're going to see any major differences in message that will court directly to progressives?
Well, firstly, yes. I mean, Romney is the poster child of the 1%. Paying at 15%, well, actually, in his case, 13.9%. I mean, he just epitomizes everything about what's gone wrong in this country in the last 30 years in terms of economic justice. I don't mean on everything else, because I think on a lot of these issues, Romney doesn't believe anything he's saying, and he's had to change his position in order to get with a Republican Party that's just gotten crazier than ever and has lurched so wildly to the right that he just has to keep sort of chasing after it in order to help be its nominee. But on economic justice issues, he just epitomizes the last 30 years of all the breaks going to the top and allowing the investor class to pay literally at 14-15%. While the middle class gets soaked. So Obama is so focused on that set of issues, the very things that progressives most want to talk about most of the time. You know, things like if we have anxieties about Social Security is actually just an accounting problem This is a straightforward progressive issue about how people should be paying. If you're making $1 million a year, you should be kicking in more for Social Security than somebody who's making $109,000 a year. I mean, that's just a straightforward elementary principle of social justice. And yet we've got a Social Security tax that caps the thing at first. It's a flat rate, and then it caps it at $110,000. So that is just ready-made. It's an issue for Obama to go hard after. And the huge issue about the marginal rate itself. We've got an enormous disparity here. I mean, here the Republican Party claims to be concerned about the debt, but they're offered yet another whopping tax cut for the 1% and for corporations. So we're going to have a dramatic difference about that to be talked about. So I think we're going to have an election that is going to focus squarely on the very issues that progressives have been yelling about for 30 years and have had a hard time, you know, getting traction or getting something done. At least we're talking about these fundamental issues about equality and fairness that are on the docket this year.
Gary Dorian is professor of social ethics at Union Theological Seminary, as well as professor of religion at Columbia University. The new book is The Obama Question, A Progressive Perspective. The book is published by Roman and Littlefield. Gary Dorian, a great pleasure. I want to thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Obama Question, A Progressive Perspective. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.